The moment I hit the stage and say my first word, all my nerves disappear. I'm just there in the moment with my audience.
You're listening to Stand Out, Get Noticed, the show that helps you communicate with confidence so you can stand out from the crowd and get noticed by all the right people. To subscribe to the show, go to thecmethod.com. Hi there, Rockstar, and welcome to episode 103 of Stand Out, Get Noticed. Christina with you here. I'm super excited to have a very special guest joining me on the show this week. The last few episodes have been solo shows, so this is good news if you're a little bit sick of hearing my voice and you want to hear someone else on the podcast. My guest this week is Jocelyn Chia. She is a New York-based stand-up comedian originally from Singapore. Our mutual friend Joshua Spodek, who you heard in an earlier episode, I think it was 97, he introduced us when he heard about my somewhat terrifying experience doing stand-up. I think he realized that I needed a little bit of help in that area. So Jocelyn used to be a lawyer, and so I wanted to learn from her how she transitioned from lawyer to stand-up comic, and to learn about the challenges along the way, and also how she deals with her own nerves and anxiety before a show. Now, to me, I view stand-up comedians as being some of the best public speakers around, so I was curious to hear Jocelyn's perspective on the whole public speaking experience. So whether you're thinking of giving stand-up comedy a go, if you want some tips on incorporating some humour into your own presentation, or if you simply want some inspiration on how to challenge yourself, this conversation will be well worth listening to. Show notes for this episode will be at thecmethod.com/Jocelyn. That's Jocelyn spelt J-O-C-E-L-Y-N. Now, before we get to that, I do have a shout out for Mac Pritchard from the Find Your Dream Job podcast. He interviewed me on his show and it came out just last week. The episode is called How to Explain What You Do for a Living. And on it, I share my best tips for creating a powerful and effective personal pitch and how to have great conversations when you're out at networking events in the context of when you're looking for a job. So if that sounds interesting to you, I'll link it up in the show notes at thecmethod.com/Jocelyn, or you can check it out at maxlist.org. Bit of a mouthful, Mac as in M-A-C-S list.org. Mac also left a lovely iTunes review for this podcast. So many thanks to you, Mac, and thank you for having me on your show. It was a real blast. Okay, and one quick announcement. Listen up if you get anxious and nervous around public speaking. I mentioned this last week. The Overcome Public Speaking Anxiety course is available for pre-sale. That's right. This is the course that people have been asking for. People say, oh, I get so anxious. I don't know how to overcome it when public speaking. So I've created a course based off that. It's a video program that helps you to overcome the 5 most crippling thoughts that hold you back from being a confident, effective speaker. In each lesson, I go deep into why we have this thought, why it holds us back, how to overcome it, and how to change your beliefs around each one. And each video lesson includes a powerful, actionable exercise to help you further banish those fears forever. That's correct. After this pre-sale, the course will be $39, but if you purchase it now, you will get it for $19. That's right, 50% off. It will be at this price until 48 hours after the course's release, which is on March 31st. So to register, go to thecmethod.com/anxietycourse. That's thecmethod.com/anxietycourse. I will also link it up in the show notes for you. So get your hands on that while you can, while it's 50% off. Oh yeah. Okay, enough from me. Let's move on and meet the very talented Jocelyn Chia. Jocelyn is originally from Singapore and is now based in New York. A lawyer turned comedian, she was featured on CNBC.com for winning the Gotham Comedy Club's Funniest Lawyer competition. She has been a guest comedian on the Howard Stern channel of SiriusXM and a guest host on MTV. She just filmed her stand-up television debut for AXS TV's Gotham Comedy Live, hosted by William Shatner, so you should definitely watch that one. She is also a 2-time winner of the Moth Story Slams, which you'll also hear more about. Okay, hope you enjoy this one. with Jocelyn Chia.
Jocelyn Chia, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. I'm really excited to have you.
Oh, my pleasure, Christina. Thanks for having me.
So you used to be a lawyer.
That's right.
Tell me about how you transitioned over to stand-up comedy.
It was a bit of a long journey. I wish it was as easy as being able to tell people, oh, I was sick of the law and I quit the law to do stand-up comedy. But no, it was a bit of a process finding what I really was meant to do. After I left the law, I actually did this program called She Creates Change for Women in Life Transition. And by the end of the almost 2 months we had together, our leader made us throw what she called a calling party, where everyone would take turns to sit in the center of a circle. And then all the women who had already known you for the past 2 months would just start shouting out what they thought your calling was. And this one woman, her name is Anna, she said to me, Jocelyn, you're so funny. I play this game with you every time you speak in class, and I wait to see if people laugh. And inevitably, every time you open your mouth, all the women will crack up. I want to see you do stand-up comedy. And it was like this light bulb just went off in my head. I was like, yeah, I really want to do stand-up comedy. I never even thought of it before in my entire life. And all of a sudden, I was like, oh, ding, 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 ding. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to do it. And right that night, when I got back home, I had an email in my inbox that same night invited me to a free seminar on doing stand-up comedy. I was like, this must be a sign. So I went for the seminar, and it was a pitch selling a stand-up comedy class. And I signed up for the class. And I think within 2 months of that calling party, I was doing my first stand-up show at Gotham Comedy Club.
Oh, my goodness. Within 2 months. So at which point – sorry, I missed that part. Like, at what point in your – legal career was this? Like, how far in
this
were you?
This is after I was done. 3 years in, and I left the law. I was actually starting my own business, but I wasn't too sure about it. It turned out to not have been the right move for me. But yes, this was after I was done with the law and kind of trying to figure out what I was really meant to do in life.
Mm. And you went to the US to study, is that correct?
I did come to the US to study. I did undergrad here as well as law school.
Uh-huh. And so what was it about stand-up that got you hooked?
You know, it wasn't right away, Christina, and I wish my intuition had told me right then and there after my first stand-up set that this is what you're meant to do for the rest of your life. But no, it was really slow. I mean, I did a few new talent shows, but I remember telling my friend, I don't think stand-up comedy is my calling. I just didn't feel like it was my calling. It took me another 3 years for it to finally hit me on a date with this guy who took me to see Aziz Ansari. And I came to stand up very late. I never even watched stand up comedy. I grew up in Singapore. We didn't have stand up comedy there. Throughout college and law school, I don't think I ever went to a stand up comedy show. And all of a sudden, I was living in Boston. I had a job there. And this guy invited me to see Aziz Ansari. I was like, oh, who is that? He's like, oh my God, you don't know Aziz Ansari? He's like the funniest comedian around. I was like, okay, sure. And I go, and halfway through Aziz's set, I'm crying, and not tears of laughter, but emotional tears. And I was like, why am I crying in the middle of a stand-up comedy show? And then my inner voice spoke up and it said, because this is what you really want to do. And I was like, no. So then in Boston, I took a stand-up comedy class at the Improv Boston. I hit my first open mic because those new talent shows in New York were 3 years ago. They don't really count. They're very different from an open mic. It's a very warm and hot audience. You probably think you're a better comedian than you really are at the end of those shows. But I did my first open mic in Boston. And they're actually better for the most part than the New York open mics because they're more supportive. New York open mics can be a very hard place to grow as a comic. You may actually give up sooner than you should because it's extremely hard to get laughs at some of the open mics here. So you really have to know which ones to go to. But I started in Boston, and I'm glad I did start in Boston because I came back to New York with more confidence as a comic. It was no more than 3 or 4 months in Boston, but it was enough to give me some level of confidence that the open mics in New York didn't shake my confidence as badly as it would have had I started out in the open mic scene in New York. So that's why I say kudos for you for having survived your first open mic in New York and lived to tell the tale. And you actually happy with your set. That's very impressive. That's not common, especially not for a first set.
Well, I'm not planning to be a stand-up comedian, so I thought for a non-stand-up comedian, it's it was all right. And I guess I didn't know any different at the time. If you told me that the audiences at the open mics in New York City were really bad, then I probably wouldn't have even gone on. So,
a good mic. I don't know which one this is. I mean, the Greenwich Village Comedy Club does have some good open mics. They're more supportive.
Well, I mean, I figured because I'm Australian, at least I'd be semi-entertaining just from
the accent. So you're right.
Exactly. So tell me about your very first show. What was that like?
The one where I took a class and did a graduation show?
Yeah.
Oh, that one, you know, I mean, not to toot my own horn here, but I didn't know it's actually not that common to be funny off the bat. I was admittedly really quite funny at my first show, so much so that I do remember the MC saying after I was done to the crowd, "Can you believe that was her first time?" So I did well, but I didn't know it was unusual to do so well your first time. I was like, oh yeah, you know, whatever, it's a graduation show, I'm sure everyone does well. But now that I have more years under my belt and seeing other people who are doing stand-up comedy at the end of a class and it's their graduation show not do necessarily even that well, even with a hot crowd, I was like, oh, maybe, you know, I wish someone had kind of told me, hey girl, you should really keep going, you got something going there. Mm-hmm. It's not that usual that people do so great in their first try, but I guess I didn't have anyone telling me that, so I was like, ah, no, not my calling.
So what do you think it was about you that made you more successful than most of the other people?
Well, again, I'm Asian, so we tend to be a little modest, as you probably know. I think there's some, I do have a certain natural funniness, like how Anna was pointing out, you know, when you're talking in our group during this class, people always laugh. And I've had that since I was a young girl. I'll say something and people will crack up and I'll be like, why is everyone laughing? And I won't know why they're laughing. And when I ask, why are you laughing? They'll just go, it's the way you say it. And so I think maybe there's something about the cadence, the way I express things, my expression. I'm not really quite sure what it is. I'm used to myself. Maybe you have a better idea, but I think there's some amount of funny that is natural and then a very large part of funny that's developed and honed through sheer hard work and dedication. So I think maybe that first time I got lucky because I had that 1% of funny that's inspiration or natural without needing that 99% of hard work yet to get away with doing well for my first show. But now I know it's 99% hard work and 1% maybe you're lucky enough to be born with it.
So have you always been quite confident?
No. I became more confident after coming to America. So I grew up in Singapore and it's a culture where children are seen and not heard. And I was always pretty outspoken though in class, but I did get into a lot of shit for it. I would talk back to my teachers, I'll ask them questions like, no, why should it be this way? Why not that way? And I got shut down a lot. And I think that was a part of me that internalized it. And so I became less brash. But then I came to America and oh my God, in American colleges, if you speak up in class, you actually get participation points. Like you get awarded for talking in class. I'm like, are you kidding me? In Singapore, when I spoke in class, I got cane. Okay. Like, that's totally different culture. So I came to America and I remember getting penalized my first semester because I wouldn't speak up in class because I was so conditioned to thinking that we shouldn't be speaking up in class. So for a whole, I think maybe my whole first year, but you know, Asians were like, oh my God, this is affecting my grades. So I forced myself to speak up in class. And to my surprise, people actually thought I had good things to say. They liked what I had to contribute. So much so that even when I went to law school, I was one of the people who would contribute regularly in class. And so I think it was kind of a growing process from being taught to just shut up and sit still and be quiet and absorb information to coming to America and having the culture be, you know, we want to hear what you have to say, your ideas are valid. To the point that some people talk too much and they're too encouraged to share their opinions, but that's the other end of the spectrum.
Well, see, that's the sort of impression that we have of Americans a lot of the time. And
right.
That, you know, oh, they're so loud, they talk too much, rah, rah, rah. And you can see how that Asian culture also affects people here in Australia, because I remember when I was at university, you know, a lot of the Asian students, they don't speak up in class. Mm-hmm. And, you think, oh, they're really quiet when they're really not. It's just part of the culture. Like, because I know in Asian culture, like, you don't, if you ask a question, it's like you're defying the teacher.
Exactly.
And challenging the teacher. And that's not what you do in that culture. You don't challenge the authority like that.
That's right. You know, yeah. What was very impressive to me, though, about American culture is, and also actually in a way, this is a reflection of how much more outspoken I became. So after my first semester and I saw my grades were dipping, I actually raised the issue to, it was the French department. I was studying French and speaking up in class was part of your participation points, and I got a zero. And I told the French teacher, hey, you're actually, in a way, penalizing people of different cultures who are not used to speaking up so much. You know, like, don't you think there should be some leeway that takes into account maybe someone's increasing participation in class as the term goes on, rather than expecting them to, from their day one in class, be speaking up in class when this is their first time in a culture where they're expected to speak up in class. And the French department actually had an entire departmental meeting to consider my opinion. I was like, holy shit, my opinion really matters in America. They had a departmental meeting to see if I had a valid point and they should take cultural differences into account in determining the participation points that students get. I was just blown away by this American culture and how valid one student's voice can have in a department. And they didn't do anything about it. They're like, no, we're going to stick to the way we do things, because it'll be just too, I think it'll be just too hard to take all these factors into account. But the fact that they had the meeting and it was a valid point enough to call a meeting and to consider this was very impressive to me.
Absolutely. I mean, I found that when I went to the US, I mean, a couple of years ago, I moved to New York City after I quit my job and decided I was going to do my own thing.
Wow.
And in Australia, we have this thing called tall poppy syndrome. Have you heard of it?
No.
It's the idea of when someone is successful or wants to be successful, and they sort of start to, quote, grow, like higher, rise up, we have to cut them down. So it means that in Australia, we're not good at receiving compliments because we don't want to seem like we're getting, you know, too big for our boots, so to speak. And we don't often openly encourage people or praise them because we're like, oh, we don't want them to get a big head. We don't want them to get full of themselves. So we're very quick to discount our own achievements. And I found that Yeah. And people might think that you're doing an amazing job, but they won't tell you.
Interesting.
Because it's like, oh, we don't want them to get a big head. But it's the exact opposite in America. And when I went there, complete opposite. When I went over there, I was like, oh, hey, so I'm Christina. This is what I do. I just quit my job and I'm here. And they're going, good for you. Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, we should speak to my buddy over here. And everyone was just so like, happy to help, and I'm going, oh my god, this is amazing. I love these people. They're so helpful.
I mean, it's so interesting that Americans, I don't know what it is. Like, do they just have a very low bar for amazingness? Like when I went to college, like people would come back from a workout, right? They went to the gym and a roommate would be like, oh, you know, how was your workout? I mean, first of all, I would never even think of asking someone how their workout was. Like, what a boring question. It was a workout. But in America, you would ask someone, how was your workout? And the answer will always be like, oh, amazing. I'm like, how can a workout be amazing? You have a really low bar for amazingness. You pumped some iron and you ran on a treadmill. How amazing is that?
So amazing, and I'm gonna go have a smoothie now, and that's gonna be even more amazing.
That's right, everything's amazing. And you, when you ask someone in America, how are you, you have to at least say you're good. If you just say fine, like you would in Singapore or Britain, they'll be like, oh my god, what's wrong? You're less than amazing.
But it's good. Okay, it might come across as a bit of hyperbole, but it forces you to start thinking bigger, I think. So Jocelyn, you're from Singapore. There aren't many Asian women in the stand-up comedy scene, or that I have seen anyway.
There are not many.
Did you face any particular challenges during your journey?
Actually, people do ask that. They ask about the Asianness, and you also ask about being female. Some people do feel like being a minority or being female is a disadvantage, but I found it to be an advantage, actually, because then you stand out more. And as some of my white male comics do complain, oh, it's so hard being a white guy in comedy.
and then you just punch him in the face.
No, I feel their pain. It's true. I mean, it's so hard being a white guy in comedy because it's harder to stand out. I mean, bookers these days, at least the more conscious ones, are very conscious about needing diversity in a lineup, right? And so because there are more white males in comedy, on any given day, they're going to have 90 white men to choose from on for who to pick on the lineup, and they can only book, say, 8 comics, all right? They're going to need some females, and they're going to need a minority or two. And so I have definitely been advantaged from having less of my quota to fill, to put it in the affirmative action terms.
Yep. So you're like, yep, no more Asian women comics. I've got this niche. I'm good.
I mean, there's still a fair number out there. Ali Wong, for example, you probably know she did the very famous Netflix special While Pregnant, and I've known of her even beforehand. She was a New York comic for a while, excellent comedian. So there are definitely a few out there. Margaret Cho, of course, was our our godmother, and there are definitely a few. And we are supportive of one another. Sometimes we do all Asian shows. I mean, Jenny Yang in LA, she actually does a disoriented comedy show featuring all Asian comics. So it's a good niche, and I think it's quite a supportive community, actually.
That's so great. I'm kind of, so I'm half Asian. Do you think I could come over and maybe half join?
Yeah, I think that sounds good. we'll get you on for 5 out of the 10 minutes. You get a 5 minute set, the rest will do 10.
Sure. You mentioned before we started this conversation, you were telling me that you still haven't watched your television debut.
Yeah, I'll probably never watch it.
So that was on the Gotham Comedy Live show with William Shatner. Right. What was that like?
Oh my goodness. That was, it was one of those things that I've been wanting for almost a year before I finally got it. And it's one of those things that make you realize, you know how some people say, don't try to get something too soon before you're ready. When the time comes, it'll actually be just right. I really felt like it was just right. You know, if I had gotten it 6 months earlier, my jokes may not have been that polished. It wouldn't have been William Shatner as the host. Mm. And just everything just lining up so beautifully. It was just a really great experience. I was nervous leading up to the show until getting on stage. So usually, I think in your... before we started the recording, you mentioned that you wanted this podcast to be about sharing with people confidence tips. Is that right? And so what I have found is the fear is always before you do it. You're most afraid thinking about doing something than the actual act of doing it. And I don't know whether this has been your experience too, but the moment I hit the stage and say my first word, all my nerves disappear. I'm just there in the moment with my audience. Is this your experience too when it comes to public speaking?
It's my experience with most things that scare me.
Exactly. So yeah. Okay, great. So I'm not, this is not an unusual experience here. So yeah, exactly. So that was exactly what happened. I think maybe about 2 hours leading up to the time I had to get on stage, I'm like a ball of nerves, right? And then the moment I hit the stage, and what some of my most experienced comics would tell me, and thank goodness for them, people like Michael Harrison and Michael Somerville, who have been doing this, I don't know, 10, 15 years, they said, Jocelyn, you've done this thousands of times. I was like, really? Have I done this? And I was like, yeah, you're right. Because I'm on stage at least once a day, and it's been 3.5 years, so that's at least 1,000 right there, okay? So it's actually more. So I'm like, yeah, you're right. I've been doing this 1,000 times. And so he said, you've done this at least 1,000 times. Just do what you know is already in your bones. Like, it's already in you. Don't even think about it. Don't even worry about it. It's going to go great because it's in your bones. You've done this so much. So I think that's the other tip that I will give about developing confidence. Sure, your first time, you may, like you said, you were shitting in your pants during your first open mic, but after your 1,000th time, right, even if you're nervous, you can always tell yourself, this is my 1,000th fucking time doing this, get over it, you know? So I did it, and then I got off, and my first thought getting off stage was, I can't believe I pulled that off. I can't believe I really did. I can't believe I really was filmed on TV with William Shatner and did a set that went perfectly well. You know, no glitch, no nothing. I didn't forget anything, no fumble. Yeah, it went very smoothly.
And I can confirm that because I watched it.
Oh, good, good. Because I haven't. That's so great.
You have to go watch it.
Oh, my God. I don't know. Maybe next year.
So you're also a winner of the Moth Storytelling Championship. Mm-hmm. Our mutual friend Joshua Spodek told me about the Moth and that he wanted to get back involved in it again. So I Googled it and I found that we actually have it here in Melbourne. And yeah, so I'd love to give it a go. So can you tell me a bit more about how, like, what is it exactly? Is it one story that you tell, and is it meant to be humorous?
So yes, you tell one story in the States. You have to put your name in a hat. It's very popular. A lot of people want to tell a story. So not everyone who wants to tell a story gets to tell a story, especially in New York, where it's very competitive and a lot of people want to do it. I'm not sure what the situation is like in Melbourne. And if you do get drawn, there'll be a theme. And so you do have to tell a story related to the theme. One story, and no, it doesn't have to be humorous. Humor does help, and the Moth audience is actually a much easier audience than a stand-up audience. I've tried telling stories at the Moth that people are just lapping up, right, cracking up, rolling on the floor, and I'm like, oh great, I can take this to my stand-up, and I do it in a stand-up comedy audience, and they're like, okay, what's next? You know, it just doesn't translate for some reason. So it's a very warm audience. Humor does go very well. I have had a friend who has won maybe 5 or 6 Moths, I don't know, a lot. And he said the stories that he finds go the best and that tend to win are those that start out funny and so you're laughing along the way, but they end up poignant. So that's okay. Something that you could take away. I think that's a good tip. The one that I did win... let's see now. Yeah, there was some laughs along the way. But
what
it
was
wasn't
that story
my funniest
about?
Story. It was a story about how I had gotten my bag stolen when I was on an airplane ride. And it turned out that the boy sitting next to me on this airplane, who was from Malaysia, had stolen my bag. And I found out because he went to Dartmouth and I got my cell phone bill. And the cell phone numbers were a Dartmouth number. So it's just a story about how we tracked him down, figured out who he was, got him busted, and how I had a moment where his life was literally in my hands. Okay, he's an international student at an Ivy League school. Dartmouth has an honor policy. If anyone's caught stealing or cheating, they are immediately expelled. All right. I mean, after going through some board of disciplinary action. But I had proof that he did it, so I could have gotten him expelled. But not only that, he has alien status in America, right? And because he had used my cell phone, it was considered a federal crime. And so it wasn't just a misdemeanor of petty theft. It became a federal crime for using someone's cell phone that you stole. I didn't know that at the time. So the FBI got involved. And
oh my goodness.
Yeah, which means if I had pressed charges, being a federal crime, he would have been deported from the U.S. So I had this 21-year-old boy's literal future in my head. You know, he was an Ivy League student. He came from a good family background. I knew this because in tracking him down, I actually managed to call up the office that he was interning at, and his boss picked up the phone. It is a really long story. My Moth story, obviously, with 5 minutes, you can't tell the whole details, but you're getting the extra back-end information. So his boss told me how he came from a very good background. The boss was very surprised. But yeah, so good background, Ivy League school. I could have destroyed this guy's life. And the stories about how I remember a time when I had done something wrong and I could have gotten my future at least severely tainted by my own misdemeanor. And I actually was forgiven. I got away with it. And I was like, you know, maybe it's better to pay it forward. The FBI agent did say he seemed very contrite and very sorry. I mean, maybe he's just a great actor. I don't know. Maybe he's like some white-collar criminal now. Maybe he did Enron. I don't know what happened to this guy. But hopefully he took the lesson that I did when I was forgiven, which is like, I'm never doing this again. I swear I'll never do it. I actually had, I stole this pen when I was in high school because my friend dared me to steal this pen and so that's what happened and I got caught and I was like, oh shit, and I was let go, I was forgiven, right? And so after that I swore I would never steal a damn thing ever again for the rest of my life, and I haven't. And I was, you know, I was just hoping that this would be his lesson too. Who knows, he may be a big time crook right now, but it was with that intention that I decided to let him go free and not press charges.
That's a great story.
No, thanks.
There's lots of lessons in there as well. Lots of drama.
I know so much drama, yeah.
All right, last couple of questions, Jocelyn. If someone wants to incorporate humor, some humor into a speech or presentation, do you have any tips for them? So not necessarily, you know, doing stand-up, but, you know, as you know, stories and presentations are, you know, more effective when there is some humor involved. So.
Wow. That's a challenging question. I don't actually know. How do I actually make something not funny funny? I guess usually the humor in a speech would come from a personal anecdote that's by far the juiciest source of comedy in delivering a presentation. So I guess whatever topic you have, the suggestion I would give is to find either a personal example. If you don't have one, ask around if anyone has a personal anecdote that you can then use tools like exaggeration with to make it funnier. If the personal story isn't that funny, you can use contrast. I thought it was going to be A, it turned out to be B. You can use your emotional reaction, because as human beings, we all go through the same emotions, and just being able to join and identify with the emotional journey someone's going through can potentially lead to some humor, especially when there's that tension and then the release of that tension. So a lot of humor and laughter comes from the buildup of tension and then the release of it. And again, this is all very general tips, and you know, it'll be up to your listeners to connect the dots and see how they can put it into their own speech. But yeah, generally, the emotional journey, tension and release, and getting a personal example that can lead to some humor would probably be some of the tips that I'll give to spice up a presentation. And I guess delivery is actually very important, because even sarcasm or relating something to current events that everyone's talking about, a lot of people are comparing things to politics in America, especially with Trump being our president, and sometimes comparing something that you don't see as related leads to a lot of humor, right? Like when you can see people making an analogy that you never saw before, and all of a sudden, oh my God, I never saw the relation between Trump being elected and men sending me more dick pics, you know, something like that.
Awesome, cool. So so you say that you're on stage every day?
You know, now I try to give myself one day off. I used to have it every day. And then I did this. It was actually more of a yoga program. But she started looking at your life very holistically. And she said, even God had a day off. So who are you to be more hardworking than God? I was like, okay. So now I do try and give myself one day off. So actually now it's more 6 nights a week.
Well, your Chinese name does mean hardworking.
Right? It means, see, this is where I think my parents got it wrong. It means needs to be hardworking. I'm like, that implies, which implies I'm nothing but a lazy ass who needs to be hardworking, right? So I'm just stuck with this aspirational name. You should have just called me hardworking if you wanted me to be hardworking. I don't know what they were thinking. They actually don't speak Mandarin. They got a friend of theirs to name me my name. I'm like, your friend sucks, okay? What is your friend's name? I think maybe he got named some, ugly boar or something. So now he's taking out on every other child that he gets to name.
You want to hear my funny Chinese name story?
I would love to.
So my Chinese name is Git Jing, which means, I think it means pure or something. But my grandfather spelt it wrong on my passport.
Oh.
So I'm officially Kit Jiang, which I don't even know what that means. And I hope it doesn't change the meaning, you know, completely. So anyway, I have an incorrect spelling on my passport.
That's my story. My friend, her name is very sad, because her Chinese name is Sai Xiang. And because Chinese words can have one pronunciation with two different meanings, so I mean, her name is intended to be some lovely smelling flower or whatever, right? But there's another meaning that has a name, Sai Xiang, meaning fragrant shit.
Oh, that's hilarious. Jocelyn, it's been such a pleasure having you on the show. Love speaking with you.
Oh, it's been a lot of fun.
So if people are, so you do most of your gigs in New York City?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. So where can people come and see you?
I am most often at the New York Comedy Club. So let's say, oh, this Saturday I'm in the Bronx. Most people don't really go out to, all the way out to the Bronx. But next Saturday I have two shows. This is March 25th, 5 p.m. and 7 p.m. at the New York Comedy Club.
Fantastic. And can people find out where your other gigs are on your website?
Once I get my personal assistant to update my calendar, yes. I am much more active on Facebook. I do post on Facebook regularly. Facebook. Yeah, so it's Jocelyn Jokes, J-O-C-E-L-Y-N-J-O-K-E-S. At Jocelyn Jokes is my Facebook
page.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
For asking. Yeah, you're most welcome. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks to Jocelyn Chia for being an amazing guest on the show this week. You can find out more about her upcoming gigs at her Facebook page, which is Jocelyn Jokes. I'll also link that up in the show notes at thecmethod.com/Jocelyn. That's Jocelyn spelled J-O-C-E-L-Y-N. Oh, and also remember to register for the Overcome Public Speaking Anxiety course. In the pre-sale, it's only $19. That's less than the price of, let's say, two margaritas. After that, it'll go up to $39. So make sure you register before March 31st. Go to thecmethod.com/anxiety course. That's thecmethod.com/anxiety course. And that wraps episode 103. Thank you for spending some time with me today. You are fabulous, and I thank you for being so supportive. Keep on being awesome, and I will talk to you next week. My name's Christina Canters, and this has been Stand Out, Get Noticed.